Welcome, everyone, to the Peaceful Planet Show. We have a wonderful show planned for you this afternoon, and I hope you're all doing well and listening in, because this show is going to be so fascinating. We are welcoming Stuart Wilson and Joanna Prentice, and we're reviewing their book, The Essenes, Children of the Light, and basically we are covering the hidden mysteries of the life of the Master Teacher, Yeshua, also known to the world as Jesus Christ, and we are honored to have them with us finally. We had some technical difficulties a few weeks back, and now we are finally able to connect with them in England, and I'm going to open up our phone lines this afternoon. If you are in the United States and wish to call in and ask a question of myself, okay, he said that we can't use the call-in lines. I'm sorry. We've got different lines running here to have our guests on air. So I know that there's one or two people that wrote me that wanted some questions answered, and I'll do my best to paraphrase those questions then. So I would like to draw your attention to about this show. If you're listening on BBS Radio, you can press the link and see the picture of Stuart and Joanna. And I'd like to refer you to their work on the website at www.foundationforcrystalchildren.com, and there you'll see pasted up to the cover of the book, Essenes, Children of the Light. And so I want to make a few announcements before we move into the interview, and mention that I've been doing a Holy Grail series on my show for 3 or 4 years now, and it's been amazing the way Spirit has worked and revealed more and more information about the life of Jesus. About 2 years ago, I myself decided to go under regression and found out that I was also a disciple of Jesus and a female disciple, and will be talking that a little bit about that and weaving it into their fascinating story. So I wanted to mention that, and my website at www.DianaSpeaksToTheWorld. And welcome, Stuart and Joanna. It's great to have you on the show, finally.
Hello, Marcia. Hi.
Hello, Marcia.
Are you hearing all right?
Yes, we're hearing fine.
Oh, wonderful. Well, your book is so amazing. There's so much to it. And I'm fascinated at how the process began. And if those of you listening are familiar with the work of Dolores Cannon, perhaps some of our listeners have read her books, which highlight Jesus as an Essene. And she is a world-renowned past life regressionist who has written a couple of books on what people have been able to unearth through their regressions. And it's really shedding new light on Jesus, or Yeshua ben Joseph, as he was known in those days. Now, the fascinating thing that comes in tandem with this, of course, is the Da Vinci Code, which puts forth the theory that there was a holy child. And then it also highlights the aspect of the divine feminine, which I work with in the spirit of Princess Diana. And I also do channeling with Mary Magdalene and Mother Mary, and have had messages for years from these greats. But I think your information is unlike any other, because you give us a whole different view on the Essenes and the life of Jesus and what really may have happened at the crucifixion that is unlike any other reading, and it's simply riveting. So I want to congratulate you on the fine research you've done, Joanna and Stuart.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, let's see, where to begin with all of this. Joanna, you've been doing past life regressions for people for some time. If you could explain a little bit about the process and then how this began to form into a book, and how these different people who apparently were Essenes in previous lifetimes came together to, with the assistance of spirit, you might say, to formulate your wonderful book.
Right. I started doing past life therapy in about 1990, and, you know, various people came to me for expressions, and, you know, there were different lies. At one stage, we had a whole lot of Kathas come in and do lies with us, and, well, it was kind of strange that they all had had, you know, lies at Kathar times, but, you know, that was just part of it.
Well, the Kathar energy, Joanne, if I may interrupt and clarify this to our audience, for those of you that haven't heard of the Cathars were in southern France, and they were another, shall we say, a more heretical group, according to the Catholic Church anyway, but in fact they had some of the same lineage and traditions of the divine feminine in their teaching, did they not?
Yes, oh, yes, that's what current research is showing us, which at the time when I was doing the Catholic, I had no idea the Catholic we did then were going to link up with what we're doing now.
Yes, and what you're doing now has just recently come into you, hasn't it? All this information and new knowledge about the life of Jesus?
Right, the life of Jesus, actually, that information started coming in, I think, was it 91 or 92?
92.
So the first book was written a long time ago, but the linking up with Jesus and the Cathars and the female disciples, that started coming in, what year was that? I'm not very good at remembering dates.
After 92.
92.
Yes.
And we did as far back as that. Oh, right.
Yes. We didn't have a detailed Cathar life. We have... In the second book, we have a Cathar.
I'm not hearing Stuart so well.
Witness.
Stuart, could you turn your volume up, please?
I have a problem. I have a cold. I'm afraid this is the loudest I can.
I have a cold, too. So we're sending healing energy to all of
you,
and you're sending some to me, and all you Reiki healers out there, send some energy my way.
Okay.
Thank you. But I wondered if you could turn your phone up a little bit, too, Stuart, if that would help. There's usually a dial where you can turn it up.
I think the phone is already turned up to the next
one. All right, very fine. Okay, so the Cathar energy came first, but then these new energies, there's a figure in the book identifying himself as Daniel, who I take it was actually... In a past life, that was your past life, Stuart, correct?
That was my past life, yes.
That's amazing. Tell us about what some of the main features of what Daniel revealed. I mean, this book took me a long time to read through it all. It's phenomenal, the amount of research and information that came through.
I think the main thing about Daniel is he was a lay brother. There were two divisions, really, amongst the Essenes. There were the Essene priests, and they only studied the Torah, the Jewish law. But Daniel was an Essene brother, and he studied a wide variety of things. He studied Egyptian mystery school material, which focused on ascension. He studied Judaic scriptures, of course, as well. But in addition to that, he studied Zoroastrian material from Persia, Pythagorean material from Greece. So the lay brothers were able to take on board a wide variety of information sources.
Right. So now let me repeat this again in the event that our audience isn't able to hear clearly, because I'm struggling a bit to hear you. So let me repeat what the question was and what you said. I had asked about the... purposes and some of the information that Daniel revealed he was working with in that lifetime with Jesus. And in addition to working, of course, with the Master Jesus, and that's the crux of the story that we want to get to today, the background that we have is that the Essenes were scribes not just for the Judaic tradition or the Hebrew tradition in Israel and in Qumran, which has been widely already explored through the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls in the 1940s, but the Essene material encompassed all the world teachings and all the mystery teachings. And it appears that the mystery teachings, including those from ancient Greece and ancient Egypt, were incorporated into the Essene teaching and accepted as versions of the light and truth, as revealed from the divine sources. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, it's fascinating. The lay brothers had a very broad remit. The Essene priests, on the other hand, would only really want to study Judaic scriptures.
Right.
They would want to study only the Torah.
All right, so let's get a little closer here to where we want to really begin to unfold, as it were, the life of Yeshua and what Daniel's contacts were with Yeshua, how he knew him, and also Joseph of Arimathea, who figures as a primary character in this book. Now, Joanna, you were doing regression, and suddenly you met a lady who then remembered that in her past life under deep hypnosis and regression that she was Joseph of Arimathea. And Joseph is the one that, I guess, was part of the core group that knew a lot more about the life of Jesus than what is recorded in our Gospels today.
Yes, it's true. I mean, what came out when I was regressing Joseph is a lot of secrecy issues, and he wouldn't actually say very much. I mean, I can't remember, was it Daniel that I regressed first and then Joseph?
Daniel first. Yes.
Yeah, and then I realized, you know, that the two were friends, so then it's something that not all past-life regressionists do, but I put them into conversation with each other. And so he revealed a lot more. But the book is really more Daniel's story. But going back to Joseph, yes, he was the uncle of Joshua, and he was the brother of Mother Mary, as far as we know.
Yeah, so Joseph of Arimathea is recorded in the Bible as being the person who owned the tomb and a pledge for the body of Jesus after he was crucified with Pilate. And so he does come down to history with some mention of his name. Also, of course, Mother Mary. And it's, you know, very intriguing, the information that you were able to coax out of Joseph and Daniel. But there's more than just the crucifixion. I mean, there's the whole Essene way of life and their teachings and how they prepared for Jesus. And let it be said, of course, that these Essenes recognized Yeshua as the fulfillment of the prophecy of the return of the Messiah. But they didn't see him the way the religions today do. So let's talk about some distortion that occurred over time, and then we'll get back to more about what really may have happened with the life and teaching of Jesus. To fill in a few of the cracks, as I understand it, Christianity was practiced as an underground religion for a number of centuries, and of course there were disciples, and some of the disciples followed the Peter lineage, and then the disciple Mary Magdalene and John and Thomas and other disciples apparently wrote their own Gospels, and these Gospels were recorded as the Gnostic Gospels. And there were actually two parts of the Christian teaching. There was the external teaching, and then there was the intuitive teaching, which has all but been edited out of the entire Christian Bible.
Yes.
And as I say that, I'm getting goosebumps because I'm feeling the presence of Mary Magdalene overlighting our conversation as we speak today.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So tell us a little bit about what has been revealed and hidden for all these centuries from the Christian tradition, especially regarding the Magdalene.
Basically, the Essenes practiced complete equality between men and women. That made them unique in Judaic society at that time. The Pharisees and the Sadducees certainly did not do that. They were highly patriarchal, And basically, even if the woman was a strong character within the home, she would have no real power outside of the home. The Essenes did not believe in that. They believed in complete equality. So some of their best teachers, for example, the leading teacher of the mysteries of Qumran was a woman. There was no problem for the Essenes there. But that view certainly wasn't reflected in the mainstream part of Judaic society, certainly amongst the Pharisees. And so because the Essenes were so, in a sense, progressive, so far ahead of their time, that made it easier for the initial pioneers of Christianity, when it started in the very earliest days, to value the input of such advanced beings as Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene, after all, was in many ways the brightest disciple of them all. Jeshua at one stage said, "This is the woman who understands the all." She was clearly more advanced than many of the male disciples. There were advanced male disciples too, particularly John, Thomas, Philip. But if you compare that with the understanding of Peter, Peter was really struggling to keep up a lot of the time. He was a very bold leader. He was exactly the right man in a leadership position.
Yeah.
But he didn't have a grasp of what we would regard as the Gnostic impulse and the main stream of esoteric information fed from the Essenes into the Gnostic impulse, which was led by John and by Mary Magdalene.
So it was John and Mary Magdalene that held the secret information that Jesus had revealed, the higher initiate information.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And that was, as I understand it, through reading your book and through my channeling with Jesus, etc., that his real teaching had to do with ascension, and it had nothing to do with redemption or blood sacrifice or any of the primitive ideas that the Christian Church would have you believe.
Absolutely.
And, of course, people will say, "Oh, but this must be blasphemy," but actually, that's not the case. The truth is so much stranger than fiction at times, isn't it?
Very often, yes. Very often.
In fact,
a lot of the inner teachings came to the Essenes initially, and they came through a group called the Kalu, and Dolores Cannon in her books talks about the Kalu. And these were really the last remnants of the Atlantean people. But the Kalu were significant in another way. They were getting their instructions from the Order of Melchizedek. And in a very fundamental sense, the Order of Melchizedek were the founders of the Essene movement. And they were the inspirers of movement around Jeshua.
Yeah.
And they were certainly very focused on ascension.
I love this information. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I just wasn't able to hear the last part. Repeat.
That's
what
okay.
You
now, the Melchizedeks saw three stages in the process of rising into the light. The first stage they called deep knowing, in which the boundaries between us and other forms of life begin to dissolve. The modern term for that would be gnosis, I think, deep knowing. The second stage they saw as integration, in which we learn to live upon the level of deep knowing, and the modern term for that would be becoming a self-realized being.
Mm-hmm.
And the third process was ascension itself.
Uh-huh,
in which
ascension.
We move beyond this reality and merge with the light.
Yes, and the Essenes called themselves the children of the light. So
they
were working with a vast array of energies from all over the universe, and we're aware of other star systems that were trying to help the Earth, and of course...
Oh, indeed.
Jesus had a very special mission, which is so frequently misunderstood by modern religion, because we've basically what they did after Constantine was Constantine and the early church fathers got to decide what they wanted to regard as truth. So it was like they took out the best parts of the truth and trashed them and incorporated the Peter teachings, which were the externalization of the Jesus teachings, and called that the truth. So as I understand it, what happened then is that some of the monks that were followers of Mary Magdalene in Egypt in the Alexandria library there knew that their heads would roll if they had those scripts in their library, so they rolled them up and put them into some jars for safekeeping, and that's how they became lost in the Egyptian desert for 2,000 years, and then were recently discovered. So, you know, I mean, they were discovered in the 40s, but there were different aspects of Gospels that were discovered having been written by Mary Magdalene herself.
Yes.
So, there's a lot of factual information. We're not just talking about hypnotic regression here. We're talking about the revelation of these new Gospels that don't put really what they do is they put the old teaching of the church to the test, and then what you bring in is just absolutely riveting about the life of Jesus. So I wonder if you can fast forward a little bit with the life of Daniel and share with us about Jesus' ministry, what he really was doing, and a little bit about what happened to him at the crucifixion and all of that.
Yes. It was a process, a very profound process of teaching and healing. He was, of course, a very remarkable healer. The Essenes had a reputation for being remarkable healers. They had a number of very fine healers, but he was a healer of a completely different order. And when Jeshua and the disciples went around from village to village, certainly there was a very practical aspect to their work. If they arrived in a village and the roofs needed fixing, the men would get out there and fix the roof. They would do whatever was necessary. And then only when the practical tasks were finished would they get to the point of Jeshua, speaking to the people, healing where necessary, and so on. So this was fully in line with the Essenes, who were very practical people, worked during the morning, and after a shared meal at midday, would have a afternoon of contemplation, study of sacred texts, and so on. So it all really sprang from the Essene tradition. When Jeshua was actually visiting the villages, disciples went out, and we now know that there were a number of female disciples as well as male disciples, and they would go out in a balanced way, so the men and women would go out together. It would give protection for the female disciples, and also that there were a number of jobs in relation to families which only the female disciples could do. And Mary was, in a sense, one of the focal points of leading the group of female disciples, the group most closely connected with Jeshua.
So it's Mary Magdalene and Mother Mary, or which Mary are you speaking?
Mary Magdalene and Mother Mary, indeed.
Yeah.
So those were the two most advanced beings, really. Uh-huh. In the group immediately around Jeshua.
Both the ladies were very powerful healers.
Extremely powerful healers and very advanced beings by the time they got to that era. They had been preparing for this for centuries before. This is, of course, something that doesn't come out in the biblical record. The gathering of the disciples to be present when their teacher of righteousness was present was something which had been planned in the interlife, that is, the space between lives. It had been planned for a very long time before the actual birth of Jeshua. So So this is a gathering, if you like, of the Soul family. The Soul family came together to support the work that Jeshua was doing. It wasn't an accidental confluence of people, and if you read the biblical account, you think, he picked up a disciple here and a disciple there, and it was rather accidental, whereas in fact it was all very much a matter of future planning and a matter of aspiration of individual members of the Soul Group to be present at the time that their teacher was present on the earth.
Yes,
if we move on to the crucifixion experience, the Essenes saw the crucifixion in quite a different way. They had planned for the crucifixion for decades ahead of this point.
They had planned for the crucifixion for decades.
Oh, yes. They knew there would be a teacher of righteousness.
And Jesus was the culmination of the teacher of righteousness as predicted in the Essene prophecy. And the Essenes, of course, were the major prophets. So, yeah.
Yes.
So they knew that this might occur or this would occur, and they used a number of different people for different functions relating to this crucifixion experience. I had no idea. Now, I do remember my life partly as Martha of Bethany.
Yes.
And I have some fragmentary memories of that, but I haven't been regressed but once into that lifetime. And what an honor it was to see it, I'll tell you. But I did see the crucifixion.
Yeah.
And when I was in my regression, I saw him on the cross, and then I saw him pass the spirit, and he gave me a big smile and a message that everything was all right now. So when I read your book, I was pretty stunned with what you revealed about the crucifixion. So do go on.
Really, the whole crucifixion process was supported in two ways. First of all, there was meditational energy which was generated throughout the major Essene communities. That meditational energy was fed into Jeshua upon the cross. There was also a system of, we would call them ley lines. They were earth energy lines which connected the major communities with Qumran and with the area of the cross itself. So the energy was fed in upon the level of earth energy through these ley lines. And these ley lines had been developed by, under the instruction of the Kalu, by the Essene communities for about 150 years prior to the crucifixion process. They knew the teacher of righteousness would come. They knew their leader would come, their spiritual leader, and it was necessary to give him support at this very vital time. And the whole crucifixion process, this comes out in the book too, was quite a battle. It was not at all certain that the light would triumph. The opposition was a lot more powerful than was realized.
Mm-hmm. And you get that impression from even from other sources that it was a terrible trial for him. And, of course, we many of us raised in the Christian tradition were taught to believe that he miraculously was raised on the third day from the tomb, and that that is the fundamental belief of Christianity. But your work adds a new dimension to that understanding. And I have to say that when I was in my past life, I did not remember seeing him raised. And so I had begun to wonder if that part had been correct or distorted or not. But, you know, I'm looking at your work and it's much more in-depth. So please elaborate on what really happened while Jesus was in the tomb.
Well, while he was in the tomb, really there was this very large stone which had been rolled across the front entrance. But because the Essenes had a long time to prepare for this, bear in mind that the tomb belonged to Joseph of Arimathea, the whole ground around it also belonged to Joseph, and there was one of his houses adjacent to that ground as well. So what the Essenes were able to do over a period of time, very secretly, they had dug a passage from an underground passage from Joseph's house along under the garden and into the back of the tomb, which meant that in effect they were able to bring a group of healers from Joseph's house through the underground passage and into the tomb without being detected by anybody who would be passing by at the front of the tomb. Bear in mind,
okay,
this was
Stuart,
enormous...
I'm going to pause just a moment and repeat that so that our audience can hear that. Because your voice is kind of foggy and so is mine, I know, at this point, but I want to make sure people hear this. So what was revealed in these past life regressions, and this was from the interlife of Daniel, or from Joseph of Arimathea, one of the characters, correct?
Yes,
it was Joseph, I believe. He talked about there having been a secret passage from the tomb to his home that people could access, and that people went into the tomb after Jesus was laid in there and laid to rest.
Yes.
So then, what were they doing in the tomb with him?
Basically, they were a team of very powerful healers. They used a number of healing techniques, including crystals. We know one character called Luke, who was involved in the crystal process. But there was also a process involved in healing with herbs. They would be laying on of hands. They would be using various ointments. It was a complete healing process. It wasn't just one technique. And bear
in mind, have crystals in there too?
Yes, they had crystals there too. Bear in mind that all this had been an enormous strain upon Yeshua. He had prepared mentally and physically for years for this process.
Yeah.
It was, if you like, an initiation process for him. But it was still an enormous strain. He was brought down from the cross quite early on, because he had to be brought down before the Sabbath started. That was their tradition. So he did not have as long on the cross as some people experienced. But even so, it was an enormous strain on his physical body. He was very far out of body during a lot of this experience. The healing process helped him to come back, but it was a very painful and difficult process to bring him back.
Yes, now tell us about his younger sister that is credited with having helped to raise him.
Oh, this is an interesting story. This is Claire. At the time we produced the first book, we did not have any direct contact with a person in this life who had been Claire. But by the time we get to the second book, we have located the person who was Claire in that life.
Wow.
And we now know that her full name was Laura Claire. She was also called Ruth. And there's a whole chapter in the second book about Claire. Claire was the younger sister of Yeshua. She was an expert in the use of healing herbs. She was a very respected herbalist. So although she was very young at that time, she was able to lead the team who were using herbs. And when Yeshua recovered consciousness, bear in mind he was very weak. He could not have walked. They put him on a stretcher. They got the stretcher down through into the underground passage, running under Joseph's garden. The stretcher was very carefully taken along and then up again, lifted up into Joseph's house, where Yeshua had a time of respite. He could recover there. And then eventually he was taken secretly out by cover of night, and he was able to leave Israel. And he had to leave Israel if the Pharisees had found out
he had to leave, because everyone thought that he died on the cross.
Indeed.
And, you know, I thought that all these years. And
yes, indeed. But that was very useful, because if the Pharisees believed he was dead, they would not be sending out search parties to find him and make sure he was dead. He was a marked man. He had to leave Israel. There was no way he could have continued in Israel after the crucifixion. We now know, it only came out in the second book, that he actually went to Cyprus first of all. Joseph had a very big estate on Cyprus. He was a very rich man. He was arguably the most powerful, most influential man in the whole of Israel at that time. He had a big estate on Cyprus. Yeshua was able to rest there and recover. It took him some time to do that. And then he was able to go by one of Joseph's ships to Syria, to Damascus, and then along the old Silk Road, eventually into India. He couldn't really have survived very long in the Middle East or in Europe after that. He had to leave.
Yeah. Oh, Daniel, too. I just would say this. Daniel, while he was in incarnation, when I first was regressing him, he believed that Jezreel had died. But then later, when we did another regression, Daniel was looking down from the interlife, and he said when he got into the interlife, the first question he wanted to know was what had happened to Jezreel. And so that was the point at which this other story, which I believe is nearer to the truth, came out. But obviously the whole thing had to be done with secrecy, and the core group of scenes were really pleased when, you know, misleading stories got put about, because then it kept Jezreel safe.
Correct. So these stories about him having been resurrected then, was that because he was physically restored and did appear to some, or was he in bilocation, or what do you make of that then?
Yes, I think it's almost certain that this was bilocation. We have more information again on that in the second book. He was able to bilocate quite easily by the time he reached the point of the crucifixion. And this was the way he kept in touch with his immediate family, with Joseph, with Mother Mary, with Mary Magdalene, with the whole group that really went to southern France, what was Gaul
well,
at the time.
You know, I want to say that you've done an amazing amount of great research here, Joanna and Stuart, and the amount of attention to every detail in filling in the story is phenomenal. Now, I want to mention a few other things that relate to this story and that corroborate it, because I have worked with Bob Murray on our program for a number of years, and Bob is the is a channel for a book called The Stars Still Shine, and he's creating our music, which is synthesized from Spirit, and there's some greats on the other side that are creating tunes for our program. And I had forgotten to mention his work at the start of our show, which, of course, is The Peaceful Planet. He wrote the song, and I've been channeling the lyrics in from John Lennon, but I had Bob on the show a couple years back around Christmas time. And Bob was picking up on aspects of my past life, which I have not, you know, been regressed to this aspect of the past life, but he volunteered to do a reading, and I said, sure, so he did it on air. And he had some information that is identical to yours. In his second book, The Stars Still Shine, he's still writing and he's about to publish. He has his son-in-law, Michael, whose spirit guide is Joseph of Arimathea. And in this case, Bob said that Joseph said that Jesus was taken off the cross and he was revived. And then he went on to do this past life reading for me on air, and he placed me with the other disciples. You know, I do remember being Martha, and Jesus confirmed that to me in my channeling, that I was Martha. And he said that Martha and Mary Magdalene and others of the disciples were in Avalon or Glastonbury, England, right after the crucifixion. And he went on to describe the teaching and all this other stuff, and I was totally floored, to tell you the truth. I didn't know what to make of it then.
Right.
And now I would like you to elaborate a little bit on whether Mary Magdalene and Martha went to Glastonbury or whether they went to France, because I have in my channeled message from Mary Magdalene that they went to France. but I find your account equally convincing, and I wonder if you could tell us more.
Both are correct.
Yes, I think the simple answer, both are correct. Their main base was in Languedoc in what is now southern France, which was Gaul at the time, but in fact there were regular shipments of tin which came from the tin mines in Cornwall that Joseph owned and controlled, and those shipments of tin, which we now know were safeguarded by Roman soldiers, so they had a Roman escort because tin was a vital commodity, those shipments enabled the Essenes to, and the disciples to travel from Languedoc up into Britain, up into Glastonbury, and that was the vital connection, really. Joseph was the presiding genius organizing all of that. And
so the disciples weren't able to flee on a ship, one of Joseph's ships.
Oh, yes. Joseph always had ships available. And
isn't it amazing the way spirit works, you know, providing a really powerful
indeed.
Person like Joseph indeed. To provide everything?
He was a vital link in the whole process.
Yeah.
Joseph had to leave himself on a ship. Mother Mary, Martha, and a number of other disciples left. Their main base was Languedoc, but certainly they got up to what is now Glastonbury, Isle of Avalon at that time. And there's a whole chapter on Mary Magdalene in the Glastonbury area in our second book. So it's a continuing story.
Well, Joseph also, he was the one that came to Glastonbury and Avalon, and some followers came there. And Mary and Martha, as far as we know, were down in the French Languedoc region, but of course there was, I believe that Joseph went down to see Mary, and Mary went up to see her brother, so therefore you could see why the record came down, that they were in both places.
Well, yes, and I feel, you know, that a lot of research substantiates that Mary Magdalene stayed in the south of France, you know, and so, you know, there are shrines to her down there all over, and there's a great to Sarah, the daughter.
Yeah.
Now, I have to tie this in, too, because this is so important and interesting. I host a prayer and meditation group, and we do, you know, various spiritual exercises, and I've taught people how to work with spirit. And in the course of things, two very significant disciples have been in my group. And one of them played a past life for us at the group some years back, and her name was revealed as Sarah, and also she remembers having shared a lifetime as Jesus' sister, Hannah. And so then she was crucified the same day, apparently, and was told to go into the body of Mary Magdalene, and later she remembers being the daughter of Mary Magdalene. So, you know, I'm sure we're not going to get 100%, you know, agreement on all the details here, but most of what we have is supported by these various piecemeal traditions, as well as the Gnostic Gospels, as well as the information from the past lives, which is so important. And what this is really doing, as I see it, is filling in a huge chasm of gap of information that the Christian Church has edited out virtually of history. And your books are filling in so much of the richness of the tradition, and especially the divine feminine, and also the concept of ascension. So there's just so much more to Jesus than, you know, people will be able to pick up from any organized religion or even from, you know, casual understanding of what he's really all about. So
yes.
it's it's really big congratulations on these books. I think they're just phenomenal reading. I couldn't put down the Azeem's Children of the Light. And before we close, and we only have about 5 minutes left, Stuart and Joanna, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the process of projecting into the future and what Daniel had to say about what perhaps may be these times now and what Jesus was doing to bring the light to the earth and how the process of light work and light workers and what is happening now with ascension and how does that tie into Daniel's message on the Azeem,
yes.
Children of the Light?
Daniel was trained to project his consciousness forward into what he called future time. And when he did that, he saw that the Azeem communities would soon be destroyed, but that the Azeem message would continue. And that, in fact, the way that Jeshua tried to set up would be distorted over time, and that the very pure impulse, sadly, would not continue for very long. The original scheme was an outer church headed by Peter and an inner mystery school headed by Mary Magdalene. And sadly, that structure never went forward. There was just too many problems at the personality level. Peter never accepted Mary Magdalene as a major teacher in her own right. So from the very beginning, there was problems with that essential plan. And that is really how it should have been, an outer church and an inner mystery school. And that would have been totally different from the Christianity as we know it today.
Yes, and I'm going to read a little excerpt here of my channeling from Mary Magdalene, where she speaks about just what you're summarizing here, and then I'd like you to continue with your thoughts on ascension. She says here, "I am of the divine feminine, and I speak with compassion about the power of the sacred feminine. It was the mission of the Master Jeshua to bring me to leadership in our circles, which did occur with the apostles who supported me, and it was later removed and my memory denigrated to that of a harlot. Call upon me for strength, compassion, and for help in childbirth. My sacred bloodline exists even today in France and England, and I leave you with a thought. History is told by the ones who control power. Look again within yourselves to the kingdom of God, Goddess within for truth. My love to all who hear and recognize me, Mary of Magdalene." So I had to read a little excerpt of my channeling from her because it so fits with what you were describing, Stuart. I wonder if you could give us a little bit of the vision that Daniel shared in the book on ascension and how the light was going to eventually reach more people.
Yes, he felt that as the planet reached the end of the planetary cycle, he felt that there would be a great movement forward into the light. Many more people would be able to make the transformation in their consciousness. He saw really the teaching of Jeshua as a way of transforming consciousness. And he saw the difficulties of people trying to achieve that in his own era. But as when he probed into future time, as we reach the end of the planetary cycle, he saw a great explosion of light, and he regarded that the triumph of the light would be assured at that point. He couldn't come in his own time, but he saw it as being achievable towards the end of the planetary cycle.
Jeshua's mission was actually to sow the seeds for ascension, which is happening now. Boy, you know, we could go on, and we've got to close out with a very special song in your honor, and I want to mention your book, The Azeem's, The Children of the Light, and thank you both for coming on The Peaceful Planet, and I want to invite you back again to come and talk on the power of the Magdalene, if you'd be willing.
Of course.
And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both, and I wish you both the very best, and I want to refer readers to your website again. Could you repeat the website?
Oh, right. www.foundationforcrystalchildren.com.
Foundationforcrystalchildren.com. And you can also go to Ozark Mountain Publishing and pick up a copy of the book. And we're going to close out with the song Holy Grail Divine by Richard Shulman. We thank our listeners for listening today to The Peaceful Planet, and we hope you found this show uplifting and enlightening, and we hope to see you back again next week on air with The Peaceful Planet. This is your show host, Marcia McMahon, thanking you all for listening. Have a wonderful day.